Billions of people just living out their lives. Oblivious.
Choice is an illusion created between those with power and those without.
I drink your milkshake! I drink it up!
Thank you, John Larson. I receive your kind words on behalf of all of our courageous members of the House of Representatives who want the best for the American people. And what we can do that is best for them in the next 24 hours is to pass affordable, accessible health care for all Americans. The best for all Americans is to have 32 million more people to have health insurance in our country.
Oh.
The best for...
Piece of stinking filth.
Shh, sitting in shop. This is AJ of the InfoWars. Listen to the Shaliak. This is Alex Jones of InfoWars. Listen to Shaliak on the Cold Reality News and Report.
This is the coolest thing I have ever seen.
Well, hello there!
My continued conversation with Clint here in Utah. I'm going to talk about creation and try to hit on some topics that we might not have spoken about in the past. Enjoy it.
Right. You know, you can't see it.
All right.
So, I mean, I think it's relevant.
All right. So, we're live. That is an incredible Wheaties hat. I've never seen a Wheaties hat. It was one of my favorite cereals.
Would you like the Wheaties hat? I have plenty of hats.
It might
give you lice, but you can have it.
It's so weird that I'd never seen a Wheaties hat.
Well, I'm not a Wheaties poster child by any means.
It's just it was wild because it used to be my jam. It used to be my John.
You mean you used to eat Wheaties?
I used to eat Wheaties. Yeah.
And, gotcha.
And bastardized it. Destroyed bastardized terms, you know, as people talk today. We've gotten so far from Thomas Jefferson at Monticello. All right, so here we are, and we want to talk about, I was thinking about things that, you know, we could talk about past that we never really... cross topics and things like that. And I personally, like, you know, as I get older, I'm like, the question still rings out, and I don't think people really I think people think about these things, but I don't think they think about them in because life is such a clusterfuck of happenings and just BS and all kinds of stuff that people think about it, but they don't think about it in really, really serious terms. Like, why are we here? What is our purpose here? What is this? And as I said, you know, coming out here from Jersey, Jersey's just so, it's like the economy, no frills. And then you come out here and then you see the amazing terrain here and you know, was, and I just think, and lately I've been thinking, was this created? Was like, what, where did this and Big Bang is just such bullshit, and but yet it's taught and it's continued to be pushed and pushed and pushed and pushed till you have people, you know, in their 20s adamantly saying, yeah, what, you got a problem? You don't think came from apes? We don't think this and that stuff.
Well, so, I see no difference between that and any other religion, right? You're adamant about the story of an origin that you can have no real knowledge of, right? You cannot.
There's no way we can tell.
And you know, it's a maxim of science is that, you know, no matter how in depth and how far you go, mm-hmm. in science, you can never know and never become the creator. It just, you cannot ever, science is the maxim of science, if I can remember it correctly, the terms, but the maxim is basically that you will never get to the point where you understand creation or source, right? It's just, yeah. It's not going to happen. Now, you can understand everything that happens afterwards. Now, a lot of people, and so the Big Bang is the religion of science, because science can never know that what created the universe or what created this. It has to have its own religion in order for it to... Because, I mean, imagine being a scientist and someone religious who believes that God created whatever comes to you and says, well, how was the universe created? You know, how did we come to exist? And as a scientist, of course your best answer and your only answer should ever be, I don't know. As a logical, reasonable thinker, your only answer should ever be, I don't know and I never will. Right? That is something that is so far beyond what we should know. I mean, and imagine with all the genetic engineering and all the shit that's going on right now, do you really want people to know? I mean, do you want people to have the key? Do you want men to have the key to creating things?
They know how to bastardize it.
You can always compound two or more things to make something. Yeah, sure, they're going to say, yeah, we created a new life form. But the only reason they're doing that is because they want to patent it and enslave it. Yeah. Right? That's the purpose of invention. Right? They're not... See, if you look at what they say, they'll never say they created it officially. They'll say they invented it. Because only an invention can be patented.
Right.
But they'll also never say that creation can be patented. You cannot patent God's work. It belongs to God. That's not just a religious concept. That's actually the foundation of the patent and the law. I mean, you cannot take something that is natural or of the source of nature and say it belongs to man. That just, you can't do that. No, it doesn't exist. And you say, well, wait a minute, I have property. No, you have a piece of paper. Right? That land that you're on, if you don't consider that to be part of God's creation still, then you've fallen for the legal trick, and what you have is a piece of paper that says you're the owner, but actually government owns the property, the ability to have or call something property. And what you've done is you've actually taken the land out from under God's law, and you voluntarily put it under legal or the law of government, and you say this land, you know, now you're acknowledging that the creator of that land is government and not God, and thus you lose all your God-given inherent rights. So you're no longer the caretaker or married or in husbandry to the land, taking care of the land, protecting it from government and corporations. Now you're under the law of man, the law of government, and now God's not on your side anymore. You don't have any inherent rights. You don't have the right to say, no, this land is property of God. And therefore, what are you seeing across the world is the destruction of the surface layer of the earth. Now, people say that's the destruction of the world.
Scorched earth, that's like getting a
wart or something, you know, a virus. So, a skin virus. I mean, yeah, you're not destroying the earth, but you are really affecting the way that we are able to utilize and be in husbandry, be in peace with the land and its law, the law of nature, right? You're taking that and you're destroying it utterly. Now, you wanted to talk about...
Yeah, like, as far as, creation... how can we look at the world the way it is and say, you know, this came from there was nothing that exploded and then became all of us.
Now I'm gonna start off by saying, look, I don't know. The process how those beautiful mountains right there formed, how Mount Tippecanoe formed, how that cave inside of Mount Tippecanoe is formed. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing. And really, I don't need to know. I don't really even...
But what is your... beyond us being able to know, what?
See, what you're asking is that typical, what is the meaning of life, or what is the purpose of life, really? I mean, that's the basic question, right?
Like,
and the question is such a simplistic question to answer, but the answer is nuts. It's, the answer is in the question itself. And that's why we never see the answer, right? What is the meaning of life? Well, take one word out of that and tell me what the meaning of life is. In that sentence, what is the key word? What is the meaning of existence? What is the meaning of life?
What is life?
Okay, well, what is the meaning of life? Come on, you can do it. What's the one word? What's the subject of that sentence? Life.
Life, life, you're right, yeah.
What's the meaning of life? Life.
It's just
the propagation of life. The existence is the purpose of existence. There's no other purpose. There's no man-made purpose. Any purpose that you assign to it is your own. And if you're not happy or content with the fact that life is the purpose of life, that your duty, if you will, to the universe or to God,
is to do everything to
propagate and further that life. And
without damaging it.
Right, without overburdening nature.
Without profiting from it.
Right, all of those things that are man-made concepts, yeah. I mean, you know, when there's too many sheep, then the wolves are happy. But when there's not enough sheep, the wolves starve, right? So that kind of natural thing applies to life. So it's not, you know, it's neutral. And that's, I think the one point I want to make to people is that the universe is neutral. Therefore, I mean, in other words, God, the concept of God, which is defined, or Jehovah, Y-H-V-H, you know, is defined as the universe or self-existence, all of existence as one supreme being, a verb, right? God is a verb. In other words, God is, you know, Jehovah is a verb. It means being. It means existence, right? Self-existence, not man-made existence or invention, right? What is the purpose of existence? I mean, the answer is so obvious, but it's not a satisfactory answer for the man who is detached from existence and is in this legal realm and wants to invent things and improve upon nature. In other words, improve upon perfection, improve upon utopia. What is utopia? Man, utopia is the middle of nowhere. That's how it's defined. Right, utopia is some place that is untouched by man. Yeah. And so our goal...
In a water commercial, untouched by man.
Yeah.
And then Fuji. After... Yeah, Fuji, right. Untouched by man.
Exactly. Well, so what should be your purpose is to be in husbandry, like I said, wed not to the legal fiction, not to invention, not to copyrights and patents, not to all this bullshit that we create... that never, ever, in one instance, has improved over nature. Tell me one thing that man has done that has been an improvement over nature. Now, you might say, well, we created the automobile. No. That didn't improve nature. What that did is it took you away from land and you started going places that for no other reason you should ever have gone. Because you should be very content working your land, being in husbandry to your land,
and sharing with people, sharing with others, doing the same thing. Sharing with
being part of existence and carrying on the purpose of existence, which is existence, life itself, right? That is what should be full and utter contentment. And I believe really the farmers. The farmers that I've worked for who've never traveled more than 30 miles away from their farms.
Because it was...
They're the happiest. I won't even say they're the happiest. Because happiness is something that is like a commercial thing, right? Happiness doesn't really...
Does this make you happy? Then you'll spend money for it.
Right. So I wouldn't say happiness, but I would say contentment. There's a contentness in farmers that don't do anything but farm. It's like a whole different...
Just an inner peace of you know, that they're doing exactly what life or creation or whatever
they're part of the purpose of life, and we are not. We're not part of the purpose of existence. Yeah. We are, in everything we do, we're acting against existence against the law of nature, and therefore we are acting anti-Christ. Because, remember, Christ is the law or logos of God. The law of the universe personified. As, you know, it's a story that you're supposed to understand and follow, and you're not supposed to worship as an idol the
you're
law.
You're supposed to
follow
You're
it.
Supposed to be like him and do what he did and...
Right.
And think in his terms, because any world would not have turned into what this is, where you can't, you know, you can't plant an apple tree or a garden or anything, because outside of nature developments, housing develops are created, and then they make the rules, and so they pull you further away from
right. So from prophecy, prophecy essentially again is what will happen if you don't follow the law of God, which is Jesus Christ personified, right? What will happen if you don't? And that's why people say we're in the end times and we're in this and that, because we've allowed everything that is anti-Christ or anti the law of nature. We're trying to replace the law of nature with our own law.
Idol worshiping.
How do you worship? The question is, you know, in the Bible, how do you worship God? And what does it say? It says through me, through the law, through Christ, you worship me. In other words, like, how do you worship a king? You follow the king's law. How do you worship anything? You follow its law. You treat it as if it is superior. If God is the universe, in other words, nature itself. So this brings us to creation. So if I'm worshiping God, and God is defined as the universe in the Bible, and really throughout all religions, really, it's nature itself. In other words, the nature of existence. People ask, what is the nature of existence? And I'm like, well, it's in the... Nature is existence. Existence is nature, right? It's all the same kind of thing. Like, it's like picking apart a machine and saying, well, what is this? It's part of the machine.
You accept it for what it is, and in its... By sitting there and wondering and looking at something so grand and so wondrous, like looking off the deck here at outside, it's something that somebody said, here, go over here and just destroy this, or take this man-made chemical and dump this here, or take this pesticide. And this is going to kill weeds. Oh, by the way, you're a weed too.
Well, so,
things like that. So don't, but just don't look at existence. Don't mess with it. Pay it forward. Move it.
Don't
forward,
allow it to cause you wonder. See, the beautiful thing about God, defined as Jehovah or YHWH, right, which is the universe, is that the whole universe is full of mystery and wonder. And that's something that we're not supposed to know. You're not supposed to be, like the ant, for instance, is not supposed to know. You know, there's not going to be airplanes for ants that let them go to China and say, hey, hi, Chinese ants, right? The ant is not supposed to, you know, and I'm saying this by design.
By design, yeah. It's just like, right. we have the ability to know things that a cat doesn't know,
and
a dog doesn't
know. When you lose that sense of wonder, now you got to say you're only seeing one part of the wonder. You're going big, but what about small? When you're dumping those chemicals, when you're stepping on, you know, in the dirt, what are you stepping on? What is that microscope? What is the microbiome that you're affecting of the earth, that you cannot see it, you do not understand it, it's there, it's part of existence, it's part of the design of life, and without it you couldn't exist, and yet you're willing to give up that wonder, give up that, you know, what am I destroying by dumping these chemicals, or by doing whatever we're doing to further man's purpose, which is the improvement upon the already perfect design. right? So while you're sitting there looking at the mountains, and you're beyond the mountains at the sky and the stars, and then beyond the stars, and there's also this, you also have to go realize that there's you are the God in the real sense of the term God, which means something that has authority or power, right? So a president is a god, a mayor is a god, a judge is a god, according to the definition of the word, right? And this is why in the old court cases, when you go to court, you would pray to the god of the court. That, you can look up old court cases, and it'll tell you you're praying to God. The god was the judge, okay? The person with authority. And that's why the Bible says don't take any false gods. Well, every one that you give authority over you is your god. So you've already broken that law in thousands and thousands of different ways.
We've been brought into the citizenship, and this construction is there with all the gods and the idols and the judges and the
right.
worship of Saturn.
And that's why those positions of power always carry with them these sort of secretive societies and these oaths and all these things, because it is a huge responsibility and duty that you carry by acting as the god. And if you a king, for instance, or the pope, etc. I mean, the idea behind it, now I'm not sitting here saying it's good, I'm just saying that the idea behind it is that you're acting in the stead of or in place of God, the Jehovah, right? You're actually becoming the judge or the agent, if you will, of God, the universe, right? The true meaning of the term. And you're taking this position of power. In other words, you're becoming a judge. Right, the Bible says, "Do not judge."
Yes, yeah, so
lest you shall be judged.
You get to judge people.
Yeah, but so these people, and that's again, I'm not saying it's good or I support it. I'm just saying this is the idea behind all those oaths and all those checks and balances, so that these people don't get out of line, out of power. But you see, in the legal system, the thing we've set up, it's no longer under God. They're no longer under God. They no longer have an oath or anything to God, they are completely separate. And so all of that nonsense, all that becomes nonsense to them, because they're in a legal system, and legal means that which is opposed to God. Right? That which undoes the law of God is what legalism is, or means, according to a lot of scholars. So, in other words, man's law versus, you know,
the law,
God's
of
law of nature, the true law that is part of existence that cannot be undone.
There is no name, no state name in nature. There is no all of these nouns, all of these all of these things that these artificial, the president, the king, the queen, all that stuff. Right? And as I said, when you look at a show like Game of Thrones, it really kind of tells you like who you are. If you're not blood, then you're just a commoner.
So, I mean, for the record, how many times have you gone through Game of Thrones?
I've watched it three times.
Three times.
And again, because it was like I missed. I was just like, how come I didn't pick that up in the first time?
Right. Well, okay. There's people who've gone through the Bible more than three times. And you know what? They know every verse, and they've memorized the names of the characters in the Bible, just as you have gone through Game of Thrones, and you've memorized. I'm actually shocked at how much detail you have kept. And you've basically developed you've taken the story of Game of Thrones, as so many have. You know the names of the characters. You've even learned from those characters what to do and what not to do, how to treat
right,
other people.
Wrong, right, exactly.
So, I mean, basically, you've turned Game of Thrones into a religion of its own, right? And if someone says something that is inaccurate to the portrayal that you're used to and that you believe in, when I say believe, I don't mean believe, but see, this is what's happened to
Well, there's people that are not that don't learn any of these lessons from watching
sure,
the show. Like, I will sit there, and it was just like, I would see these people start off being like awful and then seeing the error of their ways and then becoming better people.
Which is exactly what we're all supposed to do, but we can't do it without Christ, i.e. the law of God. We cannot become better people separated from God. We cannot become better men, I should say, not persons, right? Because remember, a person is a status under man's law.
Right.
We cannot become better men without following the law of God.
So, it's not a bad thing to say that we should all be Christ-like. Not Christ, but
Christ-like. The Bible says we're all to become sons of God, right? The difference is that it's a caponym. So the Son of God, capitalized, refers to Jesus Christ, but the little word, sons of God, in the Bible, means any man that is following Christ, i.e. the law of God. Okay, so we're all to become the sons of God. Which, I mean, really, when you think about it, means the defenders of the universe. the defenders of nature.
Creation, don't? Yeah.
Right? I mean, yeah. it's a beautiful concept,
and
really.
You've stated this any number of times, and we talk, and we've been talking about it, you know, obviously now in greater detail, face-to-face. And the crap that you've taken for what you've integrated into your research,
mm-hmm.
you know, you, I don't think you started with the Bible. You started with, you know, like,
I started hating the Bible. And the reason I hated the Bible was because I hated religion. Because later I found out religion had nothing to do with it.
And this
Bible
is a path that a lot of people take. So you've learned from, like, now you're like, why did I hate that? I've learned something from it. And
honestly, my belief is that religion was designed to make you hate the Bible, to take you away from God, to take you away from Christ, to turn Christ into an idol that you worship as God. Instead of worshiping God by acting Christ-like, you're actually worshiping Christ as if it's God. And that is, I mean, that's akin to Satanism, to be honest. That's basically idolatry. And yet I hear all the time Christians referring to Christ as God.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, and I think maybe to take some solace, because I don't like to see anybody beaten up. I've been beaten up for the stuff that I've talked about. You've obviously been, you know, you're just like, ugh. Oh my God, like I'm just trying to do what's right here. I'm just trying to do what's right. And I'm getting so much slack. I'm getting this, I'm getting that. You know, I really believe that there's a segment of people out there that are, have read the Bible and are interpreting it. And, you know, there's so much. After, when you start looking at these people and you start seeing the things that they're talking about, there's inner fighting in between all of these people as well.
And there's a
group of people out there that would hear, that I believe that would hear what you have to say and say, you know what, I don't agree with everything that Clint says,
sure.
but he's making a whole lot of sense.
I think that they would
respect you. And
what I would like to tell people, if, you know, as a disclaimer, that, you know, all this stuff that I'm saying doesn't come from my opinion. It really is straight out of the Bible. It's just that the Bible was mistransliterated.
Right.
In other words, when the king came along, and of course the king is a god. The same God that's talked about in the Bible, right? The theos means godlike, which is replaced with the word God. Archon was replaced with the word God. Jehovah was replaced with the word God. Elohim was replaced with the word God. So you have all throughout the Bible this term God.
Right.
And therefore, every time some king or judge or any man posing as a god with authority did anything bad, people use that because, hey, God did it. And because you don't
know... So they scapegoat, like, hey, this isn't me.
Yeah,
this
God's a real bastard. Look at, he killed all those children. He killed all the firstborn. And that's just not true. It's just not how it's meant to be read. And when you go in and you say, okay, The King translated into English, and it's readable, but it's not translated in the way that we're supposed to take it.
So many translations. I mean, I've learned so much just over, I want to say, like the last 6 to 9 months about, you know, the Masoretic text, and you know, there's Ethiopian Bible, and sure, there's this, there's that.
But what you really have to do is go and look at the words that as they were meant to be heard. And a perfect example of that is Jehovah, YHVH. You know, it never had, and this is, I think, one of the most important lessons to anybody who has any kind of doubts as to the existence of God or whatever, right? When they were using that term to mean the supreme being, in other words, the universe, again, remember, being is a verb. It means all of existence that is existing as an action, right? Mm-hmm. So right now, everything that exists, which we call creation, right? And I'll get into that in a minute. But that's the definition of Jehovah. It was never meant to be something that you believe in or not believe in. It was never meant to be a choice. In other words, when they use the word Jehovah, as opposed to God-like or theos or you know, these kings and magistrates and all that, the notion that the only term in the Bible that refers to that which is reality itself, existence itself, the universe, right, is Jehovah. And it's used very few times. It's like, as opposed to the rest of the terms that are God, but mean, you know, there were a mistranslation, a purposeful mistranslation. So in other words, if I'm reading the old texts, I mean, there are times in the Bible where it'll say God does this to God, or God told God to do this. But wait a minute, what does that mean? That means there's two different meanings for the word. So you have to look that up. And in the old text, it would be obvious, because it would say Jehovah told the king, who's acting in Jehovah's place, right, is to do this. But in the Bible, it literally will say that God told the Lord to do this, or the Lord told God to do this. And you get confused, because you're like, well, wait a minute. What is that? So you think people just gloss over
it. Was it purpose? I mean, there's a lot of people that are pointing this out now. I mean, just from the stuff that I've seen, like Lord and all this stuff, and they're trying to make heads or tails of it too. They're not just falling for it. Or
you shouldn't. Yeah. See, that's the thing, and that's what I keep trying to tell people is, like, don't get angry at me for what I say. Go and verify by the original Greek, the original Hebrew, what I'm saying, because when they used the word Jehovah, they, or, you know, the textual equivalent back then, they meant a specific thing that was undeniable. If you were to deny the existence of existence itself, the existence of the universe, you were looked upon as a madman. You wouldn't ever say Jehovah or existence itself doesn't exist.
I wonder, like, I mean, as I, you know, I think, and I'm like, how did this all start? Who were the first people? Where did the first, who came first, the chicken or the egg? Oh, that whole thing, like, you know, and in the Bible, it's Adam, it's Eve. You know,
no, it's not.
Okay, well, at least
that's
well,
the thing.
Well, at least
that's
at least,
religion.
At least from my thing, and then of course, you know, people still think to this day that Eve ate an actual piece of fruit,
right?
When, and actually, she was tempted, and she gave away her prized possessions. And
in my second book, I actually just go over that whole thing. And apple, it's actually a fig tree. It's not an apple tree. Fig apple is what they call a fruit of a fig tree. And the fig represents, I don't know if I remember it offhand, but, you know, the fruit of the tree of good and evil represents the concepts of men. Good and evil aren't concepts of nature. There's no good and evil in nature. There's only truth, right? So truth is not good or bad or evil, right? Evil is when you go against truth, which is only man does that, right? Man is the devil, because the devil, like, that's why they call attorneys devils, because they're practicing a law that is not of God. the concept of what is satanic or opposed to nature can only come from man. It cannot come from nature. Mm-hmm. You see, there's no, it doesn't, that those concepts of good and evil do not exist in nature. They only exist in man. And that's why the metaphor is that when they ate the fruit, they suddenly felt naked. And they had to clothe themselves because they had shame. Well, you look into nature and you tell me where shame exists other than a concept of man.
Well, maybe I'm just, you know, maybe it was just like it wasn't something that had already been defined, but it was just like, oh my God, what have I done? Like in the mind, like what have I done?
Well, it's, I guess again, it's not meant to be taken. So I, the point I'm trying to make is that the Bible is timeless. It doesn't refer to a specific history or a time. Just like, remember we were talking the other day, I was watching the old Twilight Zone, right? And I it was the To Serve Man. And,
do you have that recording?
And as he was traveling through space, he asks his alien captor, right? He says, what time is it? And because the alien is from space or from another planet, he treats the guy, you know, he answers him fairly, but he treats him like the child he is. Like someone who is bound to Earth and has no other concept of what the universe is. And he says, there is no time in space. And I paused it, and I'm like, whoa, what does that mean? And I replayed it, and I listened to what he was saying, and he said, there is no time in space, because time requires a fixed point in space in order, you know, like the revolution of the planets, whatever, the stars.
Something celestially moving
something
from one place to another.
Something that you can apply a man-made concept to, which is time. Time is not part of nature. And that's a really difficult thing to understand. But when you do understand it, when you understand there is no time in the universe, that time can only exist from a fixed point looking outward where there's something to measure on a constant basis, it's always the same. It's actually a very low concept, right? People list time travel and time this and time that. It's actually vulgar. It's actually, again, it's a concept of man. It's not a thing of nature. Now, if you're going to look at the design of nature, then yeah, it's a beautiful thing. But when you take that design and you lower it to the level of we are the center of the universe, we are the center of God, and we are looking out and saying that the universe revolves around us and therefore we have time, you see how vulgar that is, how lowbrow or unintelligent or...
Right. It's man's attempt to try to define something.
And think about it, man. Everything we do revolves around time. Remembering, time is money. Money is time. When I spend a dollar bill, what I'm really spending is something that represents the labor of man. I'm paying you $10 an hour to do labor. I'm changing a representation, a simulation of time, which is the dollar, and I'm giving it to you in exchange for your real time, right? So everything we do, our whole society, our whole system of law is based on time. Now, you're going through, like, credit shit right now, trying to get shit right off your credit.
Trying to.
Okay, well, think about it.
Shamefully.
Why do you have bills? Why do you have something that says you're delinquent, you never paid us, and therefore we're trying to collect? What is the one element that defines that? In other words, would your debt exist in the universe out in space where there's no time? Because you know what? You had until December 31st to pay me. There's no such thing as December 31st in space. December 31st exists on the Roman calendar, the Jesus timeline that Rome created.
The Julian, the Gregorian.
Exactly.
Which was the one they went to, Gregorian, or they went to Julian? I think they went to Julian.
They went from Julian to... Shit, I can't remember.
Either way, I wrote a blog about it. They went from one, and for some reason they manipulated it and went to another calendar that would benefit. Commerce.
Well, I mean, we're on the Roman calendar, right? The Jews are in like the year 36 something. I can't remember what it is, right? So they're on the calendar that started from what they call, and this is where the 6,000 year old. That's where that concept comes from, is because they're on that calendar. They start their calendar from what they say is the beginning of time, or God, even, right? But we start our timeline at this point where supposedly Jesus Christ, you know, was born, etc., mm-hmm. etc. That is the Roman timeline, and we're stuck in that particular delusion of time. But remember, if you're talking about God, the universe, time doesn't exist. So that then brings us to... So your debts are all based on time. Because if there was no time limit for you to pay the debt, and it was based simply on your God, your inherent duty to pay that debt, if it was a real debt, if money actually had any, you know, thing behind it except time, well, then they'd be like, hey, it's your God... It's your duty to pay us, and it's a legitimate debt. Therefore, you must pay us. But since it's an illegitimate debt, and it's based on time, and they want you to pay them in time, which is money, you see the problem. So your debts wouldn't exist if you didn't respect the concept of man-made time. You respected the universe and all those beautiful things that cause us to allow us to record the seasons and record the almanac for farmers and that kind of thing. But what we've been tricked into doing is following the time. Okay, you worked on Y2K.
Yeah.
Do you think that the year 2000 actually existed?
No, it's just
because I mean, to the Jews, they're in year four, you know, almost year 4000 or whatever. So, which is correct? And the answer is none of them are correct.
They're more correct.
You think the universe has existed for that long? Well, then you subscribe to the Big Bang.
What, 4000, 6000 years?
Whatever time limit you put on God, a vulgar concept that is not of God, right? The universe, existence itself. You have to think. See, this is the problem. Is you have to think of God in timeless terms. You cannot think a beginning and an end. And you know what the Bible says? You must become immortal. You must have no beginning or end. How is it that you have a beginning or end? Now, most people would say, I'm born and then I die. But you see, that's not it. What that's referring to is the fact that you accept a person. And that person has a beginning in the timeline, in the Roman legal timeline. In other words, it's a contract, the devil's tool, basically. So you are born and die, and it's recorded, it's registered under Caesar or the district. So you're supposed to be timeless. If you're to be a son of God, you don't respect the timeline. You respect the seasons, you respect the...
So people that are chronically late... are actually more in tune with...
More in tune with nature, I'd say. You find that in Europe more than...
Is it just laziness, or are they just fighting... Are they fighting the system, this fictional system, and they just don't even know?
I think there's... So I think there's both. I think there's, on the one hand, they don't want to conform in some sense, but on the other hand, they are lacking... A certain amount of duty towards your fellow man, meaning if I say I'm going to be there at this time, I mean it. I'm not, you know, and then I arrive late and I'm just like, oh, it's just the culture, you know. So there's two things there. Because like I said, everything, the law of nature relies solely on your ability to fulfill your duty to other men, all other men. All life, all existence.
And that includes the female version of man, which is
of course.
Female.
Yeah, anytime you say man, that means you're referring to the species, not to a sex. And that's another weapon, that's another tool to divide us. Because, I mean, you know, I've said this a lot of times. If you're a female and you refuse to call yourself a man, which is a term of nature, and you call yourself a woman, which is a term of legality, you've already lost. Mm. See, if you really want to have women's rights, then call yourself what you are, which is a man. I'm a female, but I'm still a man.
So in a sense, Caitlyn Jenner...
Oh, that's again, political...
Kind of like, you know, I've always been a man. It's like, well, yeah.
You're still a man, whether you like it or not. No matter how much you alter yourself, you're still a man, and you're still a creation of God. However, the more you get away from that, then again, the more rights, inherent rights you lose, the farther you detach yourself from yourself, mm-hmm. right? And that's really what the Matrix is, right? That's really what the digital age and the artificial intelligence is to take you away from nature. Everything they do is designed to take you away from your marriage, your wed, your husbandry to God, to nature. That's the whole purpose behind religion and legalism. I mean, really.
And I look at that, and in Genesis, there's that word, that husbandry, right? That I did see that once or twice in there.
I want to say it's probably in there, but I can't remember.
Then, I mean, what even was a husband back then?
Well, I mean, husbandry also refers to things like being a rancher and having cattle. You're in husbandry.
I think that's what they were, right?
And that's where Noah
Noah was in husbandry,
right? Well, that's where the notion of having a wife is, right? You're getting married, and you're in husbandry to the wife. However, you see, in the Jewish tradition, that means the wife becomes subservient and can't have inheritance, and that's all man's law, right? But in nature, that idea of husbandry is respect and taking care of, and the wife is doing the same to the husband. The wife is in husbandry to the husband, right? It's a word that doesn't, you know, every word has been taken out of its natural context, its real context, and turned into a legal concept so that it can be controlled. So when you get married in the legal realm, you're not getting married in nature. God, in other words, would not recognize that marriage if you were to talk in those terms, because it's not a natural union between a man and another man, i.e. a female, a male and a female. It's a union between, and it's actually an incorporation of two persons, two statuses in legal society. So when a marriage happens in the legal realm, it's between two things that are already property of government, already corporations of government, which is the person, you know. The shoe or the car on the Monopoly board is a person.
So you're further embedding yourself.
The thing that you operate, the commercial vessel that you operate in. So all you're doing is merging two corporations and calling it one. And you're getting permission or license to do that because, you know, why in the hell would you need a license to get married? And the answer is you don't. Unless you're talking a legal marriage, which means you're taking the property of government and incorporating it and making it a single person, right? What is a corporation? Corporation is many persons acting as one. What is the motto of the United States? Out of many, one. Right?
There you go.
Well, there you go. In other words, a corporation. Corporation. Take away the individual voice and right of people to protect and be in husbandry with God and nature, and you have the United States. Corporation, where everybody's voice is silenced in favor of the one voice, which is essentially what the Bible would call God. The false God, the false authority. And that's what we're all under, these false gods. Again, anyone that has authority, or anyone that you respect as having authority over you, is your God. And that's why you don't take any false gods. Therefore, if you don't have a false God, you don't have a false law. You're not taking any law or doctrine before the Bible or God's law. Right? And so all of this stuff, all of this that we're talking about, was scratched. And religion comes along, right? And they teach you all this stuff to take you away from God, from nature itself.
Yeah, we'll become your God. We'll read the Bible to you. You don't have to do it. You go ahead and if you want, read it. But then, you know, if you have any questions about what this means or what that means, will tell you what it means,
right?
And
right,
it'll be, and it'll be part of the religious.
Yeah. Now, there's one other problem that the religion has purposefully done, and that is to separate. And this is where it gets. People think this is controversial, and the only reason they think that, or it goes against their beliefs, or it goes against the Bible, but it doesn't in any way. The reason that we think that is because, again, we're not looking at the meaning of the words, the intent of the authors of the Bible. We're not looking at what God means, Jehovah, as a, you know, we're not looking at all these words. What does creation mean? What does the Creator mean when those terms are used? Are they being used universally, in other words, of God, or are they used of men, right? Because men can create, in a sense, they call it invention, but what man can't do is create existence or life. So that's the maxim of science. Good, man cannot create existence. Man cannot create a source. So the maxim of science is you'll never discover what is source. God, you know, source. God is source, source is God. Truth, right? Science will never discover that.
Right.
And that's why they have to have their big bang, their religion.
Right.
And why every religion has to have this kind of, and every culture has its origin story, right?
Right.
No matter how ridiculous it can be. So that brings you to this concept of you're looking out at these mountains and you're saying...
Well, I mean, I know that I'm more of a magnificent creation than what I'm seeing, just visually it's
but it's because you still
more
have
than I'm used to.
It's because you still have the capability of wondering. I mean, think about life in the artificial intelligence or the Matrix, right? You have no sense of wonder whatsoever. It's just this in the legal realm, it's just the strict law, nothing else exists. You have no choice, you only have causality, right? You can't vote no, you can only vote for two things that are put in front of you. So in other words, if you vote for the losing candidate, you're still voting yes for the winning candidate. If you don't vote, you're still voting yes for the winning candidate. Right? You have no actual choice. Right? You have no free will in the legal system, and therefore you have no right to be in husbandry to the land. You have no right to follow the law of God, because the legal system is set up to take that away from you. Now, when it comes to creation, and again, this is really hard for people because there are points in the Bible where it says don't confuse the creation with the Creator. Don't worship the creation as the Creator, right? And that's a very important concept when it comes to polytheism or what was called paganism, right? Because paganism... The important part of paganism gets confused with the worship of nature, but paganism is actually polytheism. Polytheism is the worship of parts of nature as gods, whereas monotheism is the worship of the universe as one whole supreme being, right? And that's the difference. So you had Poseidon, the god of the sea, you had this, you know, they had all these pagan, as they called them, religions. Now, there's people who want to, and I find this fascinating, because if the people who call themselves pagans and hippies and all these different classes of people who worship and nature, if they could understand the meaning of the word Jehovah, which is nature, or the nature of the universe, God, it's, you know, the universe itself, then they would have, you'd have no problem, you know, following Christ, which is the law of the universe, law of nature. But the problem is, religion came along and separated creation and creator. Now, if I'm going to sit here and I'm going to look out this window, I'm going to say what or who, or you know what the proper term is, created that tree. I'm somehow going to dismiss the earth. I'm somehow going to dismiss the whole universe in which that earth is existing in. And I'm going to say that God created it. But I'm not saying Jehovah when I say that. I'm not saying the intent of the word Jehovah in the Bible. I'm saying what religion says, which is somehow God exists outside of existence. Even though Jehovah is defined as existence itself, Jehovah is defined as the universe, right? I'm saying that God created the universe. God created nature. God created creation. But wait a minute. How does that make any sense? If you know the meaning of the word and the intention of the term, which is an indisputable, like I said, you don't question the universe, right? You don't question that existence exists. But I'm saying, as a religious Christian or whatever, I'm saying that God somehow exists outside of existence. But it's defined as existence. Okay, so what is creation and what is the creator? They're the same thing. The warnings in the Bible refer to paganism or to polytheism, not confusing or not worshiping a tree as God, but worshiping the whole of creation, which is, you know, the universe, as God. And that the individual parts, which we call creation, are not God. Just like the Pope is not God, or that anything that you idolize, Jesus Christ, is not God. Part of God, right? The what emanates from God, logos, sure, but not God. I'm not God and you're not God, but together we are part of creation. Now, we're not the creator, because the whole, the monotheistic God, the universe is the creator. But we're part of that creation. You see, the words themselves have been so confused and separated. But again, if we're to worship the law of nature, then God is nature. The law of nature is the law of God. And if I look at any government and they define an act of God, I can look in any dictionary and the word act of God is defined as an act of nature. Well, how can I separate nature and God? How can I separate creation and creator? They're one and the same. What is the purpose of life? What is the purpose of existence? Right? What is then creation? Creation is existence. Now, you're worried of what gets confused, I think, is what is source. And I'm here to tell you, you're never going to know that.
Yeah.
So put it out of your mind. Worship.
I like to contemplate it. I like to.
Oh, absolutely. And you know what? You're free to do that. But the second that you assign any deity to it, then it changes. You see, you've now, the Big Bang. I mean, what they're essentially saying in science is that the Big Bang created God. Because they're not familiar with the term Jehovah, which means the universe. The Big Bang created the universe, is what they're saying. Which is, you could say that's blasphemy, you could say that's a lot of things. What you could also say is that it's completely beyond the point. You know, it has nothing to do with the Bible or anything else. The other thing is evolution. Right? You're tricked into, and I'm just as guilty as anybody else is watching these debates between the evolutionist and the creationist. But I'm like, wait a minute. Why are we saying that evolution is not part of the design of God? How can it not be? Right? I mean, if you're going to argue that life exists or whatever because of evolution, the problem with that argument is that life had to exist already before evolution could happen, right? So that means it's part of the design of life itself. Evolution, in other words, is part of, I mean, for God's sake, cancer is said by many, many people, many doctors, as evolution. The unfolding of things and refolding into a new form. That's pretty much what cancer is the evolution or the response of the body to something that is not supposed to be there. Unnatural and not, not of God, basically. So, you know, all these things, these institutions are set up to fool you, to trick you and take you away from being one with God, with the universe, with nature, within husbandry to the land. That is the purpose of all these man-made institutions.
They're playing the middleman, and it's you know, money. There's multi-pronged, but they're playing the middleman that should just not even be there. But they're like, hey, this could be profitable. Let's do this.
Yeah, I mean, you know what? What have they done? They have monopolized time. They've taken a universal thing, a timeless concept, and they've made it into mammon, right? And that's why you're not supposed to, you know, you can't have two gods. You cannot have time and timelessness together, right? Now, it doesn't mean that you can't utilize a lot of the things that man has invented. A lot of the systems are good systems if they're not taken as law. In other words, it's great to have a watch on your hand that you can know exactly when the sun is going to go down. But the second you assign that watch a place in nature, then the watch can keep track of nature, but it's not part of nature. It's not part of the law of the universe, remember? Because time doesn't exist in space. It doesn't exist in the universe. It only exists from that relative perspective or vantage point, right? Mm-hmm. So the second you turn something into an idol, the watch becomes the keeper of time as opposed to God, in other words, right? Which is timelessness. You know, you've turned something man-made into something godlike, and that's where everything goes all wrong.
The worshiping of this.
Right, and exactly. So you consider then the concerted effort to, I mean, literally the killing of people who equate God, a creation, and creator. I mean, they want to hide that fact so much that they're willing to kill and label people as heretics or, you know, whatever, pagans, and kill them. Because unless they can convince you that there is this external God, right? In other words, take the meaning of the word Jehovah, which is the universe, and say that there is some higher form of God. And what that boils down to, and it's interesting because this is in the Bible too, is superstition, or what is called supernatural. Right? Think about the word supernatural, or how about a superhero? What does that mean? It means they have powers that don't exist in nature. Not part of the design, right? So something is making it above nature. And that's how we've been sort of educated or brainwashed to think of God as something that is above nature, when God is actually nature itself. You see, so, and then we have these things called Mother Nature and Gaia and all this stuff. But you see, the end game here, the reason that I'm so, when I started understanding these things, I understood them from the perspective of both sides, a battle between good and evil, between real and artificial. You know, anything good is of nature, anything bad is of man, right? Anything artificial. And so you're in this battle, the spiritual battle. And spiritual, again, is a word that's been taken completely out of context. Spiritual means you're in touch with nature. The nature of things, the reality of things. Spiritual isn't, oh, you're far out there, you're on drugs. You know, you don't have spirituality because you take, you know, some mushroom. No, you have spirituality because you're in touch with nature and truth, in other words.
I saw this meme where this guy is talking to this woman, and she says to him, do you believe in God? Are you religious? He said, well, I'm spiritual. And she says, well, Lucifer was a spirit too. Yeah. So could you be a little bit more specific?
And that's just it. People are so afraid
to say, right,
to even use the word Jesus or God, because they don't know what it means.
Well, yeah, you look at that, and then you look at politics now with Trump in office. People are afraid to, like in Hollywood, there's a lot of conservative people out there that are afraid to to say
they're that, afraid. Listen to what you're saying. Well, they're afraid.
I'm not
to
saying
use,
it's right.
No, listen. Yeah. They're afraid to use the name of God, which is Trump.
Yeah.
Isn't that amazing? Because that's what Trump is. He's a god. And the sooner that people come to that understanding, and the sooner they understand that that's what it means in the Bible by false gods and false laws and false doctrines, you know, the legal law is a false doctrine. The doctrine of the Methodist and the Catholic and every other church out there, religion, which were created, instituted by men, are false doctrines.
Right.
As soon as people understand that, that Trump is a god, and that you know, the mayor Pete is a god. He's a mayor, right? These are all gods. They're all false gods.
No.
And the sooner you understand that, and you get this idea, because you again that word God is.
I was going to say this. I think that's what the Democrats are looking like. Who of these like 50 people?
Who of these idols
are going to save us from Trump?
Right. Isn't exactly. That sick? It's the it's war sick. Of gods.
It's sick.
And that's essentially, I mean, to call it Satanism, you know, again, there's a word that's completely misunderstood, because all the word Satan means is that which is adversarial to truth or nature or God. Right?
So there's Satan, there's Lucifer, there's Beelzebub, there's the, you know, just there's so many.
And what is the tool of the contract, or the, excuse me, the tool of the devil is always the contract, right?
Just like the crossroads.
And you're always under, if you're under a law, that means somewhere along the line you've fallen for the devil's trick, which is to get you to sign or do some action which puts you under a contract. Like I said, if you spend money, you're under contract. You're using the property of government, you know, and saying... Sure. Yeah. So it's your actions that put you under the contract, not the fabled signature in blood.
It's such a powerful fiction that
that people actually believe in the devil, right? Even though I can go to Scotland and I can look in the parliament there, and they have a big book. I can't remember what it's called. Is it the Devil's Handbook or something? And
there's a book called that.
Attorneys are the devils, and they practice deviling. You go to Black's Law, I think, fourth, and find the word deviling. It's the practice of law, right? So, I mean, if attorneys are called devils, and attorneys deal in words, contracts, well then, you know, we have a problem here. And this, of course, we're talking about semantics in every possible way here. And the real problem is... they've turned spirituality into a semantic argument when it's, again, God is self-evident. And God, and I don't just say that. Again, when I say God or Jehovah is self-evident, I'm not saying that's my opinion. I'm saying God or Jehovah is defined as that which is self-evident. In other words, self-existent, which means not man-made. Right? And if you can just get that, what is God? God is everything not man-made. That is
everything that was here before man decided to...
And after. Yeah, I mean...
To try to improve
on that. And another way of saying that is what is of man is of the time domain. It is temporary. All the temples and all the things that we build are temporary. But what is of God is permanent. Eternity, eternal, right? Immortal. That's the big difference. And that's why when you put so much faith in the man's creation, man's inventions, knowing that they're temporary in all cases, the whole idea behind worshiping this concept of Jehovah is that you're putting your faith in that which is eternal, nature and the law and its law, the universe, right? But the inverse of that is to put your faith in the creations of man, which are religions and the false gods and the false laws and the false buildings and the temples, right? And remember, one of the most important lessons in the Bible is that it is you that are the temple of God, right? Nothing in it says specifically in the Bible that those things that are built by the hands of men are not of God. In other words, Jehovah. So, you go into a church, I mean, tell me, are you going to have a more spiritual experience? Knowing what the word spiritual really means. on my porch looking at those mountains, or by going to some, you know, stale, sterile building with stained glass, right? Which is going to give you a more spiritual experience and put you in touch with God?
Well, this is natural and that's man-made. So,
but see,
knowing what I know now,
well, that's what I'm saying. It's a trick question, because that question is based on what your personal belief in God is. And remember, the God of the Bible is not. It's not debatable. Like I said, it didn't give you the choice to believe or not believe in God. In fact, I would assume that even the concept of saying God doesn't exist, I mean, that's just nihilism. That's like existence doesn't exist. So it wasn't even a... I don't even think it was a real thing like it is now. Like, people have actually believed there is no God, even though God is existence. So I don't believe in the existence of existence. But I don't think that was a concept back then.
Yeah, it's no wonder. Like, the very first, you know, man that walked, I mean... How is it for them? I mean, they're born, they experience through their eyes what they see, the sustenance, food, they eat, sensations of hunger, all these other different things that have not been defined yet. How do they know? I mean, they can look at the sky, they can see that, you know, that there's a sun. Like, how would they even say, oh, there's a God or something like that, you know? Well, I mean, it's like, how would that even come into their thought process?
That question can only be answered by taking, again, the Garden of Eden. Now, in the Bible, the word garden is another mistranslation. The word garden actually translates to prison, or some place that is enclosed. Okay? When we think of garden, we think, oh, look, my flower garden and da-da-da. But...
So you think he just...
But meant... what you're talking about is being, again, in tune with and in husbandry with the garden, with nature. Right? So we think of garden as something man-made, but, hey, the Garden of Eden, in other words, is God's creation. The creation that is God. So You're talking about someone that who's born into nature, right, who knows nothing else, has no other constructs or beliefs, right? Which the Bible calls Adam, but Adam is a word that means mankind, and Adam actually means fallen, the fallen men who are fallen away from. That's why they were kicked out of the garden. So if you consider the Garden of Eden
after the eating of the.
Yeah, so you consider the Garden of Eden as the perfect utopia, in other words, a garden of God, basically, which means creation, essentially, untouched by man. And they're walking around naked. They haven't
drink and feed.
They haven't killed anything to wear its fur as their clothing, because they're perfectly content. They have no concepts of good and evil. Those are, you know, the concepts of man. Right. So you're talking about a in the good sense, a prison or a protective area that is not influenced by man. And it doesn't say in the Bible, by the way, because Adam is mankind, it doesn't mean that
it's referring to all of man.
So it's not the single man. Although,
Eve would be
when you tell a story like the story of Garden, you know, any story in the Bible, you take a group or a concept and you shrink it into something that you can tell a story about, right? So if I'm telling the story of the law is Jesus Christ personified, right? If I'm telling the story of mankind and how it fell, well, then Adam or mankind, I'm going to make it into a single man, and I'm going to tell the story metaphorically, allegorically, about how man fell from the garden, how they escaped the what you would call the
what they did,
prison is
what
a
they
weird
did right,
word.
What they did right, what they did wrong.
Yeah, yeah. So
and,
why
and,
is
and the results?
Why does Adam exist? Because Adam is mankind. In other words, not man, but man as a construct that has fallen away from nature, from its place in nature. Why does Adam exist? And you tell the story of the garden. And remember that tree of knowledge of the good and evil is the concepts that man, the inventions of man, all the things that don't exist in nature. That includes good and evil. Right? He tells you, don't partake of the tree of knowledge. Knowledge, again, not the real term that should be used. It should be the conceptions or the inventions, the lies that man creates, stuff. The opinions, all the things that we believe in that aren't of truth. Truth being God, right? Nature. So, I mean, all of this stuff has this beautiful, beautiful, beautiful there's allegorical meaning.
And then there's the tree of good and evil, or knowledge, right?
Yeah,
tree. And tree so of that represents, and they put it in the form of a tree.
But to tell a story.
To tell a story. They put it in the form of a tree and say, remember, this is a good tree, and this is a tree that produces a fruit or the fruits of, you know, badness.
Well, I mean, you can find has, all throughout storytelling where the word fruit is used as a metaphor. The fruits of my labor, the fruits of this, the fruits of that. But if you take that as a literal term, then you're going to get lost. No, they didn't actually. Yeah. There's not a man in the garden that ate a fruit and then, you know,
right.
You can't take it literally.
What in Genesis, they say that Noah was like, not, I mean, all of these hundreds of years, these nine, and I mean, the way that they put it in there, like 9 and 500 years and things like that. What do you suppose that they meant by that?
So in the Bible, the translated word is generations. And to most people, that makes it sound like genealogy, right? What is a generation?
One lifetime.
Of what? A man? A way of life? A nation? A timeline? Well, that's just it. But we're just absolutely positive without questioning that it's genealogy and that people lived for 900 years. No. But you know what does last for 900 years? Nations. Tribes. You know, things empires. Like that, concepts, things of man.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But when you take it literally, you're like, you know, you got whole people out there trying to figure out, well, how did they live for 900 years back then?
Well, I listened to Ken Hovind, and he was just like, the world back then was entirely different. The air was different. The food was different and all this other stuff, so that they were able to, it was an environment that enabled people to live.
And
past,
you know, while Kent
past Hovland, our 120.
While Kent Hovland has some really incredible things to say, he is still taking literal interpretations of the Bible, which anytime you take it literally, you're going to miss the point. Mm-hmm. Right? This is a known entity throughout all the history of stories. Right? I mean, From the Epic of Gilgamesh throughout the Bible and past, it's always something that you're supposed to take spiritually as it regards existence, not as something that is a historical. That's why I say you have to, when you're reading the Bible, you have to experience it from a timeless standpoint, from a point where you're not bound by the laws of men, where you can look at yourself and look at society, the creations of man, and say, hey, I am acting in the way... I'll put it to you this way. I think Kevin Hovland was one of the guys that exposed this, and it helped me greatly. And that's what confuses me about guys like him, is because I think he's trying to... Whereas I won't pander to people who have their own beliefs and refuse to look at the actual meanings of words.
Well, he's making money.
He's pandering to...
He's making money off of...
So, yeah, and I might sound harsh or whatever, but all I'm doing is acting Christ-like. Because, you know, when Christ came upon somebody that, you know, had these strange beliefs or was idolizing things, I mean, he was, you know, he turned over the table of the money changers. He called people, you dumb ass. He called people out for, like when he said that, he said, beware of the leavening of the Pharisees. Okay, what is leavening? It means when the bread rises. And later on, they came to him and they said, we don't understand. We don't understand what it means. How are the Pharisees going to leaven? And he's like, you fools, I'm speaking metaphorically. Right? and that's all throughout.
So is there, and I looked at this and I went through the Kindle, the massive Bible selection that comes in the, with Scamazon. And I found a King James Version for $1. Actually, 99 cents. I figure, okay, let me start here. Let me pull this down. You know, I have a reference, and then it's got Psalms, and it's got the Old Testament, New Testament. Is there, and I want to say that I crossed through some information that said that there was a book of some sort that took the King James Bible and then basically just broke it down, took out the unto these and all of these other things that can... You know, that you kind of understand. Is there something out there that just really puts the story forward in terms that we can understand now, so that you can get on a path?
Yeah,
that would be easier for me to do because I definitely want to read it. I definitely want to
That's just it. You don't read the Bible; you experience it.
Well, that's what I want to do. I want to say that I've experienced it, that I've done it.
I'm going to tell you right now might sound discouraging. Okay. I'm going to tell you, there is no fucking master copy of the Bible or any book that's going to teach you or make things clear for you. The only source...
Well, I mean, the stuff that I know prior to this, all my pre...
Right, but the only source...
Understanding.
Of the only way that you can grasp it is doing the due diligence. Looking up every single word as it was intended to be. Now, if you're looking for... first of all, here's your problem. You're looking for an English Bible. English is the language of fucking slaves. Okay, it's called dog Latin. The legal system is still based on the Roman, the Latin system, but they created English for the lower class of goyim to have a language that they could speak, and then they put the Bible out in that language so that you can never actually understand it. So I'm going to say right now, there is no English version of the Bible that is ever going to take you to a level of understanding. Okay, that said, you've got to consider that English is the most modern, current language, and there's 50,000 different versions of the Bible, right? So consider the Bible as a tree or a triangle, an upside down triangle, right? Not to get all esoteric or anything, it's just a way of looking at it. At the top of the upside down triangle, you have this massive group of books that all are the Bible, right? All lined up. And as you go back in history, you know, we'll call it time if you want, that triangle goes like this, right? It gets smaller and smaller and smaller to the point where it's at a single tip, which was the original
objective.
Conception, the original languages, the original things. Now, I'm not going to sit here and say that I know who wrote the Bible. I'm not going to sit here and say that God wrote the Bible. That's ridiculous, right? When they talk about the notion that the Bible is the Word of God, that's another mistranslation, because word means law. So when you say it's the Word of God, it's actually the law of God. But men wrote it. Men that are inspired by divinity, if you will. It's, in other words, being so in touch with reality and truth that you can actually speak. And I'll tell you, anytime any man speaks truth, he's speaking the Word of God. God is truth. The Word of God is the Word of truth, and the word refers to the word law, and you can also translate it as son. Son, word, and law basically are all the same thing, but to tell the story of the law and how it was given to us. You put it in the word son, and then the son was sacrificed. The will and the testament was given to us, right? Because the living God, which is Jehovah, the universe, can't die. And according to the law, in order to be a testator, you have to die in order to pass on your will. So the son is put on earth in allegory, and then the law is passed on to us. And we who act as the sons of God, who follow the law of God, then inherit the earth. We are the meek, right?
The remnant.
Sure, sure. The point is that if you take it literally, then you're not realizing that Jesus Christ is this thing that you're supposed to follow as opposed to worship as an idol. The fact that the notion that Christ existed and was crucified, right? In the Hollywood version of it, you know, Mel Gibson's horrifying tale of Christ's journey, right? I mean, it's all so horrific, and it takes any beauty in the story away from it. But in the Bible, you translate these words and you find out that it's actually, and it even says it in the translation sometimes, it's talking about handwriting, it's talking about words. And that, you know, you're putting up a public notice, essentially, onto a pica or a pike, a single piece of, like a telephone pole. Mm-hmm. You know, people put up lost pet notices and shit like that. Well, that's how you made a public notice. Public notice is one of the most powerful things in law. So if I was to give up my person, crucify the worldly things, right? Of the crucify the flesh, and then the word, and the flesh doesn't mean your actual flesh. It means all the temptations and all the things that are man, right? Prostitution and all the sins are of the flesh, right? But we take it literally instead of figuratively. Now, and here's what I want to say to people. Look, if you believe that in the Bible, without actually reading it, without doing your due diligence and seeing what this actually means, this story of the crucifixion.
Faith without works.
If you believe that you understand that, and you believe that a guy named Jesus was crucified on a cross, and by the way, there's no evidence whatsoever that crosses existed in the Roman times, that form of punishment was ever used. If you believe that Jesus Christ was crucified, I'm going to tell you that in the Bible, it tells you that you also must be crucified. You must also be put upon the cross. So if you call yourself a Christian and you say, I believe in the story of Jesus Christ, I believe that he was crucified, put to death, rose again, all that stuff, and you say you're a Christian and you're following Christ, well then by your literalist interpretation, not looking at what these words mean, which are all metaphoric, then you must also be crucified. Because you're a Christian, you must be crucified. See, in the Bible, that means you must give up your persona, everything false. All the false law, the false doctrine, you must give everything up man-made and return to nature. Be reborn as you were born into nature, without all these false beliefs, without all these conceptions. Being husbandry to the land, right? You're reborn into nature. Because your second birth, remember, is nowadays it's the birth certificate process. Born into the new system of law, man's law. To be reborn is to actually leave the false doctrine and go back to God's law, right? That is what, in the Bible, that all is interpreted as. It takes a great deal of effort. Like I said, there's no one book that you can read that explains this. It took me years and years of going through all these words, and every word says, metaphorically, this means. Metaphorically, this means. You have to know the real. I have to know what a rock is, right? A stone is, in order to understand that the church is built upon the rock, but that actually means people. The people of the church are the rock the church is built on, right? But if I take it literally, well, then it just means a rock, a stone.
Well, people say that you're my rock when
right. Like, and we use really the same metaphors that are in the Bible all the time, every day. But the concept of the Bible being metaphoric somehow, even though all ancient literature is written the same way, through metaphor and allegory, aphorisms and all, you know, fairy tales, all somehow we don't want to, somehow the Bible has to be truth as written, right? Even though the word whale is a mistranslation for sea monster, right? The kind of sea monsters they used to put on maps to warn people away from not sailing into the Bermuda Triangle, right? Even though these are all metaphoric, allegoric things, the Bible is the one book of antiquity that we say, oh no, we're not going to take that like a metaphor, right? We understand that all these different books are allegorical tales to teach a moral lesson, but if you can take people away from the foundation of all law, which is the Bible, and say it's literal and do all the, you know, that's that, then they win. They now have set the law. The purpose of the Bible.
But do you think that saying that I accept Jesus Christ as my Lord and Savior is the kind of the same, in a sense, is the same thing as you're saying, is accept the law of God, accept and be Christ-like.
That's what it's supposed to be, but what people are doing in religion is creating an idol. I accept this image that I have in my head.
Don't take any other gods before me.
Right. I mean,
is it okay to idolize that point of process and not?
Well, that's just it. There's no idols.
Creations of man.
There's no idols in nature. Again, truth has no idols. Mm-hmm. So you're wearing think about it. You're wearing a cross around your neck. You have no idea why you're wearing it, but you know that it somehow represents the church and Jesus Christ and all this stuff. But you ask a Catholic why they're wearing the cross, and they say, well, we wear our sins around our neck. We publicly display that we are sinners, therefore we wear this cross, but because we believe in Jesus Christ, it's okay that we're sinners, and therefore we're going to go to heaven. Right? I mean, it's just this false doctrine.
It's an excuse to be able to continue to be sinful.
To continue to sin in God's name. To sin in God's name through Jesus Christ, when Jesus Christ is supposed to be what takes you away from sin. So you wear the idol to pretend that you're following the law of God while you continue to be an absolute sinner. And please be understanding of what sin is. Okay, it comes from the word S-Y-N-N, and it's, you know, anything sin that begins with S-Y-N, synthetic, or, you know, synco. There's so many words that begin with that.
Again, it's not being natural.
It's anything artificial.
Right?
Anything man-made, basically, that you're taking and pretending that it has a nature. It's of nature, of God. So that's the idolization of things. And
so
you can also...
So the commandments, as far as, you know, them being what they are, you know, thou shalt not kill, I mean, that's, you know, you're killing something in nature. I mean...
Are those the laws of God? That's the Mosaic Law. So who was Moses, right? In other words, it's the law of the Jew. Right? The problem with it, and why the New Testament fulfills, it doesn't replace, but it fulfills the Old Testament. This is why the Jews don't accept it. You remember the word Jew.
They don't accept the New Testament.
The word Jew, or Iudaeus in the Latin, it actually means fallen ones, or the those who are not Antichrist, against Christ, against the New Testament, which is the new law. Right? So the Jew doesn't accept Jesus Christ, not because they believe Jesus Christ was a man that walked the earth, but because Jesus Christ is the law, the God's law. The Mosaic law, the including the Ten Commandments, are holy, holy, holy incomplete, right? And here's why. And this is why the New Testament is so important, because all throughout the New Testament it says, do not take or respect flattering titles. Do not take or respect persons. Right? In the United States, we're all persons. You can't worship God in person. You have to worship God in nature as a man, not a person. Right? But we've disobeyed all those rules of the New Testament, which you know, basically we've been Judaized in the sense that we've been taken back into the Old Testament, even though we idolize the New Testament and Jesus Christ. We're not following it in any way. We break all the rules. We're in personhood. We have flattering titles, which is any title of authority. So king or magistrate, God, whatever. All right? We break all these rules. We pretend we're something when we're no thing. Thing is a noun or a name. I'm a captain in the Air Force, and therefore I have the right to kill. I have a license. See, what the Old Testament didn't do is cover the trickery of men, which says, well, yeah, I mean, thou shalt not kill unless you're in my military and I give you permission. You see, the old law says you can kill with license, but the new law says nope, no exceptions. See,
why didn't it just stop at the Old Testament? Like,
because it's Jewish law. It's the law of the fallen. In other words, you talk to the typical Jew, they'll say, we'll never screw up. Why did Bernie Madoff go to jail? Because he screwed over other Jews. Right? He didn't just screw over the Goyim, he screwed over other Jews. That's a big thing. So thou shalt not kill Jews, but you can kill anyone else. Right? This was the Jewish law. This was not the Christian law. The Christian law came along, or the New Testament, the new law came along to fulfill. If you consider that the old law is, Old Testament is like a brick wall, a real porous brick wall, so it can't really keep anything in. There's all kinds of exceptions and clauses and loopholes that says, well, I can kill if I have permission by my God, which is a man. So then
but they're still going to heaven, by the way, just so you know.
Well, yeah. But then the New Testament comes in, it's like the mortar, and it fills in all the bricks. So now all the exceptions, no, you can't pretend that you're a person and then say you're a soldier and that you have a license to kill and therefore go kill. No, you can't say you're government and then go in and have a license to legally steal shit from people. No, you can't be a police officer and say that because I'm a police officer, I have the right to confiscate everything you own. No, you don't have the right. See, the what's great about the New Testament is that it like I said, it fulfills that Jewish law, it fills that Mosaic law, and takes away all the loopholes and all the exceptions. In other words, it says, like I said, you know, you do not accept persons, do not accept flattering titles, because only through a person, a status in legal society, legal meaning the undoing of God's law, only in taking a persona, a mask, and acting as something that you're not, can you then go through that, you know, that porous wall and kill and pretend that it's justified by quote-unquote God. But once you apply the New Testament, the Jesus Christ, right, you're following Christ now, you're following the new law, and the new law says, under no circumstances, no exceptions. And of course, this does not include protecting yourself, because that would be considered protecting creation, protecting nature, mm-hmm. right? So the idea of actual self-defense doesn't get included in there, because you're actually fighting against something that's trying to destroy you, and you are part of God's creation, right? So that, you know, that doesn't count. What we're talking about is using the law, pretending that you're acting in God's name, and killing, even though the law says do not kill. You can't do that with the New Testament. You just can't. You see?
Okay.
So why do the Jews then say, well, we don't accept Jesus Christ as our Savior? In other words, they don't accept
the law.
Right! They're into usury. What does the new law say? No usury. No grocery. No money. No mammon. None of the stuff that the Jews use. And remember, when I say the word Jew, I'm using the Bible term of eudios. And if you read the entry, which is in one of my last blogs, I mean, it even refers to one of the, I think it was John, who defines the Jews as those which are opposed to Christ. That's what a Jew is by the meaning of the word eudios, and then Yahudi is the other term that the word Jew was used upon. And you can look these terms up, and they're two different terms. What we're talking about today, though, are the iudios, as I'm probably saying that wrong. And it's those that are opposed to Christ. And this is why they refuse to take it, to accept Christ as what they call their savior or law, right? Because what can save you? Only you can save you by following Christ, the law of nature. That's the only thing that can save you, or in other words, bring you out of Babylon, is if you follow only the truth, because Babylon is built on fiction. You cannot worship two opposing. You cannot worship what is artificial and what is real at the same time.
I gotta tell you. I mean, a lot of the, again, I mean, and these are things that you know you're reiterating and things that we talked about before. There's a lot of people out there. Bible followers, Bible scholars, things like that, that would hold sail, agree with you. I mean, they wouldn't go, there would be a point where they wouldn't go all, they'd be like, listen, I hear what Clint's saying, and I agree with this, and this, and at the risk of them, affecting their, so the way people that follow them look at them, they would say, I don't agree altogether, but I do agree with Clint. And I think that
it goes back to your
look at your words.
It goes back to the Star Wars geeks and the Game of Thrones geeks, right? If I say something that somehow doesn't sound like what you perceive Game of Thrones is, you're gonna be, I don't agree with that. It's fiction.
Right.
There's no agreeing or disagreeing.
I think that they largely, when they had a problem, it was just like the writing is just awful.
Well, here's what it is. All arguments are, when it comes to the Bible, are semantic. What does the word say and what does it mean? So the argument is always, well, Clint said this and I'm interpreting it at what he said as this, and yet I can go, everything I say, I can show you in the Bible, going to the concordances, going to
most of these people are just in judgment mode. They don't want you. They don't want you to prove them wrong.
They're not there to learn. They're there to be contrarian.
Yeah.
But if someone wants to learn, then I can show you. It might take a very long process, but because you have to go back and you have to define terms, right? What was the intent of the author? What was the intent of the word being used? Why did the king change it to suit his goals, which is to create a legal system, right? The Pope, I mean, the secular, it helps to understand this, by the way. It's not new world order, because remember, the word world means what is man-made in the Bible. Okay, when it says be of the world but not in it, and that kind of speech in the Bible, it's referring to man's world, not earth, not the universe.
Be of the world, not of it.
Yeah. So you're speaking of two different worlds there, right? So when we say new world order, which is a very common, I mean, presidents have used it, right? It's not like it's something. I mean, the only reason people don't understand what that means is because they're saying world and they're thinking earth, or they're thinking some universal or global thing.
The key word in there is order, though.
The key word is world, because what does world mean?
Well, the world is the deceptionary thing, order is we just want to control you.
It means secular,
right?
Non-spiritual, not of nature, not of God, not under the law of God, not under the moral law. That's what new world order, it's new secular order. Order out of chaos, because once you stop following the natural law, the law of nature.
People say the new world order is coming. That's all.
You're in it. It's the matrix. You're in it. I mean, it's the legal matrix. You're already in a secular order. The idea is to be saved by Christ, which is the law of God, to come out of that, be reborn into nature. But church religion has changed that beautiful concept of being reborn into some religious rite, weird, you know, all the crazy Christian, yeah. And there's, you know, I say that because there's thousands of different Christian religions, none of them obeying or pertaining to the meaning and the intent of the Bible. And again, that's because they're not looking up the words. They're taking the English version, the dog Latin, because it's the when I say dog Latin, the reason that they call us the power mongers, those in the know, the reason they call you dog as a common goyim of the nation, you know, the citizens, is because a dog is four-legged or four-footed. And that's how they refer to slaves.
Man and other animals,
exactly. That's why they call it dog Latin, because it's the Latin grammatical set transferred into this English language. Meanwhile, the original Latin words, which I'm looking up and seeing what they mean, that don't translate in the same way into English. You know, when you go to court, the judge hears the Latin word, you're speaking English, you're screwed. You don't know what that word means in the legal system. So, I mean, this is the problem. It's all semantic.
It's misdirection.
Absolutely. It's inversion. It's all the
saturated
different tools.
Deception and...
Yeah, it's all
and,
the different tools.
And I, it's gotten, or, you know, it's and honestly, it just seems like it's part of a blueprint because it just continues and it morphs and it's like, there's like, if they right. do this or people start doing this, then we're going to do this. And then start doing this and doing that. Then we're going to say, this is bad. If it doesn't fit into our structure, we're going to do this. We're going to do that.
It's the same with the Democratic and the Republican Party. If one falls, the other's there to catch it because they're the same freaking people. The same bloodlines ruling us, right?
And they want
to
stay.
And they pretend to be one or the other. So, yeah, it's... That's why I say you have to look at the Bible as a timeless document because yes, it's going to continue.
In there,
never going to end.
In there, there's a number of people that say that it's for future generations. So they, mm-hmm. I think they definitely look at it as, you know, timeless. Like this is going to be used, maybe not for now, but it's going to be used for, and it's going to be useful. You know, down the road.
Well, you know, I always, you know, I love that movie. I'm sure we've talked about it before. That movie, The Book of Eli, right?
Oh, Book of Eli. Yeah,
where the bad guy knows the power of the Bible.
God knows the power. Yeah.
And just like now, he also knows that. See, the problem with English speaking people like us is that we think we're so freaking smart. Right? We think we're so intelligent because we have this grasp of language and we can read books.
I went to university.
Yeah, I know, right? University.
I have prestige.
I am a trick, right? So we fool ourselves into thinking we have a grasp of what's
been
going
educated.
On. Right. But we're speaking the language of slaves and thinking we're speaking the language of the master. And that's our problem.
Of the free.
We are illiterate. Despite the fact that we know a language, that is essentially an illiterate language. And the reason it's illiterate is the very thing we're talking about is because you and me and everybody has been so shunned away from what metaphor and what allegory and all that is. And English is a very literal language, right?
I know somebody who doesn't talk dog Latin. I'm pointing to the cat on the table.
Hey, Frankie. So, yeah, I mean, like I said, I'm not doing this. I'm not spending all this time
to try to offend somebody.
And yet at the same time...
Well, they don't even know why they're offended.
No, I know.
They don't even know why.
At the same time, yeah, you have to be. It takes a little bit of offense to come over to the other side and, you know, come back over to the light side.
Hey, you know, just listen for a while. Listen without judgment for a little while. If you don't agree, you'll agree to disagree, but maybe you'll learn something.
Yeah, but the question is, agree to disagree. That's a classic sort of...
Well, it's a more...
I would say that's a classic fallacy. Because
it's more of an amicable, like, I'm not going to hate you, you're not going to hate me.
Well, I'll tell you what. Before I talk to anybody, this is what I should say. I said, look... Here's what we have to agree on before we can speak. There is only one truth. There is no alterations of truth. There are no versions of truth. There is only truth. You cannot believe in two opposing truths because that cannot possibly exist.
It's like serving two gods, right?
So, when I say we agree to disagree, that means one of us or none of us has the truth and one of us doesn't. Right? So you're agreeing to disagree means that one person necessarily is wrong or is caught in a lie or a deception. Right? So we'd have to agree that the truth, what is truth? The truth is never what comes from man, which means that language can never be truth. What we say cannot be truth. Truth is God. God is truth. Nature itself, existence, life is truth, nothing else.
What is self?
The words that we use can only describe truth, but never be truth. And that is why we agree to disagree, because we're not using the right words. It's not that we disagree, it's that we don't know the meaning of words. And that's purposeful. Because if you knew the language of the master, then you wouldn't be a slave. That's why they say a Bible reading people cannot be enslaved, but only if you know what the Bible is actually trying to tell you. Right? Mm-hmm. And it's not me. This is not, none of this is me telling you this. This is straight from the meanings of the words that were intended, you know. And like I said, you're reading an English Bible, and there's many of them. You want to know what the Bible says? Go back to the beginning, right? Go back to that foundational, the ancient languages, and start discerning them, and realize that those languages, which they called the Romantic type of languages, were steeped in metaphor, steeped in poetry, steeped in all these things. That's why we have all these, the Iliad and all these poetry.
Why do you think that they were things? So... I mean, it's great, but I mean, like, why do you think that they were so vague? Why do you think that they were so, like,
I don't think they
metaphorical,
were.
Did they just not know how to define it?
No, I think we are. They were speaking in, like, you know, today, if you're a man, a male figure, a dominant figure, right, and you say you like poetry, or let's say I want to talk about politics and religion at a party. Well, we have a social contract, don't we, that we're not supposed to talk about those things? And yet, only 100 years ago, it was the measure of a man. A measure of a man, male or female, in what you could speak about politics and religion.
You were considered...
So that's how far we've fallen.
You were considered somebody who was, you know, on a level respected, or at least somebody would look at you and say...
You weren't an idiot.
You weren't a fool.
You weren't illiterate. You weren't, you know...
You're not going to be able to steal his, you know, his coppers.
Right. Now what do people talk about? Anything but. Because that's how we've been entrained. And if we're talking about anything but... the law of God and the law of even the law of man, religion and politics, right? Then how can we be considered anything else but animals who can't govern ourselves? That's what the legal system is for. Legal system exists only for people who cannot govern themselves. How do you self-govern? Through Jesus Christ, through following the law of God. That's how you self-govern. That means you don't accept anything that is not true as truth. You know, if I were to put the Bible and the law into one sentence, that would be it. Do not accept what is untrue as truth. That's basically the whole damn thing. And that includes idolatry, that includes religion and politics and government law. All these things are untrue. I mean, that's the basic tenet of this whole thing. Remember, I mean, geez, there's two things in there that are so clear and so self-evident, and yet we ignore them. Most people don't even know they come from the Bible. One, God is truth. So, in other words, the truth can only be what is of God. Right? God is truth, truth is God. So, nothing man makes, including language, is truth, right? But we can discuss truth, but we can't ever create it. We're never the source of truth, right? That's only God. Secondly, and most importantly, oft quoted but never utilized, the truth will set you free. Straight out of the frickin' Bible, though nobody really likes to admit it. Straight out of the Bible, the truth will set you free. What will set you free? God.
The law of God.
But God cannot be considered as anything but what it is defined as. If I'm the author of the Bible and I say God will set you free, the truth will set you free, and that God is truth, then I must know what the word God means. I must know that nature will set me free. The law of nature, God will set me free. This is why you cannot... You know, we're talking about tolerating all these different views and opinions. I'm like, no, you can't. I mean, I would never read any book and then say, well, I'm going to change the meaning of the words of the book, and I'm going to take the character. I'm going to do everything I can to screw up the meaning of the words. Well, what use is the book then? See, if you take away... If you give people the Bible and you say, here, I've taught you English, I've taught you the language of slaves, now you can read the Bible, now you can set yourself free, and then I never tell you what the words mean, do you have the Bible? Or do you have a book of words that are meaningless and that will be interpreted in there's 7 billion people on the planet, it will be interpreted 7 billion different ways.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
But if I give you a book and then I give you the lexicon, the concordances, and I say this is how you're supposed to take these words.
And there is a thing called the Strong Concordance.
Yeah, I mean, Strong's Concordance is more geared towards, and it's important to understand that Strong's goes with the King James
Bible. It's an accompaniment.
So. It's an accompaniment of that, but you have to understand the King James Bible is the accepted law. It's the accepted Bible. And that the legal system, the secular system, is opposite to King James Bible. You're either following what this government's. In other words, the Queen is the keeper of the what do they call, the defender of the realm and all that shit, right? Mm. So she's bound by the Bible. But if you disobey,
right,
and you fall under the secular law, well, then you're accepting a person, and you're accepting the flattering title of the queen, and therefore you've given up God's law. You've said the Bible is stupid, and I'm going to follow the law, which gives me license to do all these crimes and sins, and forget the Bible. But at the same time, you're respecting the queen, you know? You're respecting this flattering title.
She sucks. I hate her.
Ugh. So... Are we out of time?
No, we're about, we got about a minute and 45 seconds to wrap it up here, to fit it into the UCY thing. So,
anything we didn't cover?
I think we accomplished what we set out to do, you know, to talk about. I mean, and it kind of was things that we, you know, that we had talked about maybe like originally, but you know, just creation and things like that was.
Well, I mean, the point I think really is, you know, how do you get across that you're not trying to put? I'm not trying to put my own interpretation. What I'm trying to get people to see is that the whole system of
well, your word and everything kind of synced with Daniel, right? I mean, when you were. You know.
Yeah, for the most part, he was still a little bit literalist in you know,
right.
His.
But you communicated with him because he was a different type of.
Because he could understand that there was a reason behind all this. It's not just this is history and therefore it exists. It's this story is being told to teach you a moral lesson, right? So he was able to cross. Right. Over in that way.
So it was a good thing.
Most people can't, and that's the problem, and that's how we're entrained to think, is literally through the English, you know, lexicon. So, but, I mean, my point is that I just, I'm not trying to put my interpretation, trying to tell you my interpretation is only what the lexicons and everything is, and that the whole law is based on that. The whole legal law is based on that, which is opposed to, which is the Bible. There is only one holistic system of systems. I will MK Ultra, ya. Put the MK scope on ya. If the MK hits you, it's guaranteed to open ya. The 57 millimeter Mark 110, 200.
20 rounds a minute, try to stop them. Don't put that on your wish list, that's retarded babble. Protesters make the hit list soon as they start to rabble. They are nothing but fishes in the barrel. It doesn't have to be Christmas for a carol. Some decorate with ornamental decorum. Some perform shock and awe on Hanukkah and Purim. That's where my job come in. I am a blessing to the mercenary for the corporation selling weapons to them. Any potential competitor step into them. I'm authorized to knock them out and stick a GPS into them. They want to sell uranium to Iran. That's enriched, that's a bitch. Now we gotta teach a lesson to them.
This is Ozzy Skateboard, and you're listening to UCLive.tv.